Hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and a huge GM and welcome to a new and the final for this time only Next Stage Live Session powered by Collision Conference, North America's fastest growing tech conference, where we look to welcome over 40,000 attendees and more than 2,000 startups in Toronto this June 26th to the 29th. Oh my God, it's 3 weeks away from now. I've been hosting a series of live streams with some of our speakers as a sort of countdown to Collision hype series. And I invited some of our exhibiting startups as well to join me and get some face time with our speakers and ask them questions about building their businesses specifically in Web3. I'm the co-host of Collision, Casey Lau, coming to you live from San Francisco, where I am away from the Blade Runner skies that seem to be plaguing New York. But apparently Toronto is all clear and ready for action. This is a startup show, so we're going to delve into the inner workings of tech companies and specifically Web3, because some people still don't understand what it is. And we wanted to look inside more Web3 companies and see how they're getting built and what they're doing. So you'll find links to our past episodes with the CEOs of Animoca Brands, Ledger, and Tezos posted alongside today's interview. All right, I'm excited to introduce to you one of our Web3 speakers at Collision this year, Emily Yang, better known as People Pleaser. People Pleaser is a multidisciplinary artist whose work centers around ideas of storytelling. Her inspiration span from anime to old cartoons to video games, traditional Chinese and Japanese art. Her work has inspired the formation of the prolific investment group PleaserDAO, helped define the aesthetic of the decentralized finance movement. She's graced the cover of Fortune magazine, the cover of Vogue, as well as collaborations with DJ Steve Aoki and Sotheby's. She was in Forbes 30 Under 30 in 2022 and ranks in the top five of Fortune's Nifty 50, a list of the most influential figures in the NFT space. And she has donated more than $1.5 million to charity with her NFT sales. In 2022, she co-founded Shibuya, a Web3 content studio and creator platform. The company has recently raised $6.9 million with A16Z and Variant leading the round. I'm not only an anime fanboy, you can tell by my hat, but I'm also a People Pleaser fanboy. And we've been trying to get her for over a year to come to one of our conferences. So I'm super excited that Collision 2023 will be our first appearance of many. Please welcome People Pleaser. Yeah. Oh, where's the sound effect? Okay, wait, there's a one. Down. Emily. Do people call you Emily or People Pleaser?
I think most people call me Emily. It's really weird, actually, if we're in person and you call me People Pleaser.
Exactly. That's like your art name, right? You're like, that's your, the people know you from that name. Where, can you just tell me quickly, what is the background of that name?
Totally. It's my personality type. I'm sure a lot of people can relate. When I was making my art account, it was really just one of those things where I needed a cool artist name because my name, Emily Yang, is not really good for SEO. There's like, I know a bunch of Emily Yangs. There was an Emily Yang in my graduating class at UCLA. So I just thought it would be like a cool artist name. I wasn't in love with it at the time. It was almost like a placeholder and I was like, oh, I can always change it later. But then everything happened so quickly and kind of stuck. But I think people relate to it, so that's good.
So I want to start off a little bit with your background. You came from an animation background. Now, I know, and then the story is fascinating, and I'm not going to ask you to go into it because you've done it so many times, and I'm going to link to the great A16Z crypto talk you did recently about the whole, how you got into the whole industry. But the animation business I've seen, you know, I'm an animation fan. I've seen it in Japan. It's very tough. It's very low paying. I'm originally from Vancouver, and there's a ton of animation studios out there as well. You know, when you worked in it, is it a passion career? Or is it something that you can actually, you know, it's something you can thrive in?
It's absolutely a passion career. I actually started my career in Vancouver. So nice. After completing my third year at UCLA, I decided to drop out of school to take a job in Vancouver at this company called MPC to work on several Hollywood movies and in visual effects in general at the time. I think I was getting paid like 20, it was 28,000 Canadian dollars, my annual salary. Honestly, at the time, I was stoked to even just have a job and be able to work on Hollywood movies. And I feel like that's kind of how the whole industry draws people in, right? We're full of creative people who are very passionate. We're willing to trade our labor and time and skills just for, you know, a little bit of a glory of being a part of something that's so huge and for everyone to see, which is, I think, a beautiful thing to begin with. But unfortunately, as with a lot of industries go, I think that has sort of been taken advantage of. And I feel like the industry has kind of turned into this thing where they're, because people are just always willing to work for less to sort of get to the next big project that they want to work on or trade more time for free. And so it's sort of created this, and the lack of having a union actually in visual effects sort of created this negative feedback loop that causes a lot of artists' time and salaries to be compromised. And so I definitely felt that. I was actually reading Ed Catmull's Creativity Inc. And every time that he mentioned, it's a great book, highly recommend. Every time he mentioned something about him seeing something wrong about how, you know, early days Pixar or, you know, any of these other places were operating, I was like, check. Everything bad that he talks about applies to the VFX industry, basically. So, it's definitely an unfortunate thing. And I feel like it's such a beautiful phenomenon that people are so passionate about something that they're willing to, you know, devote their time to it, even if they're not getting compensated properly. But at the end of the day, people need to feed families, they need to survive, right? And there is so much money going into Hollywood. I think it's just not being evenly distributed.
And I think it's what's happening with the writer's strike right now, right? That's what they're seeing.
I mean, it's an unfair ask to have anything be evenly distributed in any industry. I mean, it is a fair ask. It's more unrealistic, I would say. But I think in Hollywood more so than other industries. And so, that's also we can talk about this later too, but that's part of why I wanted to start Shibuya, to just really do my sort of small attempt at changing that.
Exactly. That's exactly the lead and I'm looking for, right? So that the catalyst of all this was that you wanted to work at Pixar. You're a big fan of the WALL-E movie and you wanted to work for Pixar. You obviously read the book, the Creativity Inc. book. So there's everything around you that's pushing you toward there. And they made an offer. Is that right?
Pixar? No, I actually have never gotten a job at Pixar before.
Okay, but there was an animation, Apple was the one that gave you a job offer, right? Before the pandemic.
Apple. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they pulled that offer because of the pandemic. And then you're like, what's going to happen next? And so I guess this is the catalyst kind of that pushes you forward to start Shibuya.
Yeah, I think it really started with, you know, after my job offer from Apple got rescinded and I was having an existential and, quite frankly, a financial crisis during the pandemic. I was constantly interviewing for jobs, and in between interviewing for jobs, I think that being in the Hollywood industry for so long, I've been sort of just executing on other people's visions and never actually had the freedom to express my own creative visions. And so one, to pass time, and two, to make myself feel like I have a purpose in life, I started creating art just for the sake of it. And that's how the People Pleaser account was born. And then this just coincidentally happened around the time that the 2020-2021 bull market in crypto was picking up. And I specifically I remember browsing crypto Twitter and noticing within DeFi that there was a lot of money that was circulating and, you know, a lot of booming startups and opportunities. But there were no people doing any sort of creative endeavors within the industry. And then in an effort to just make money for myself and also create a job, I sort of put myself out there and I started creating animations for DeFi protocols. And then that's how I grew my audience from basically nobody to a small group of dedicated DeFi fans who are very crypto native. And then, from there, you know, everything kept just snowballing. Mostly, I think when the Uniswap video came out in 2021, and then it sold for $500,000, that really put me on the map with especially people in the NFT space. And then as sort of NFTs, crypto, DeFi, everything was sort of jumbling together and then moving towards a more mainstream narrative, then I started getting more opportunities like the Fortune cover, which then created another wave of attention, which creates another wave of opportunities. So all that is to say is that I've been very lucky, and you know, I highly recommend people not to, you know, self-plug, but I highly recommend people to watch my talk at A16Z Crypto Founder Summit. It's on YouTube. You can just like Google it, but because I basically talk about
before our talk.
Yeah, I basically talk about the journey of, you know, sort of the struggle of a creative and, you know, how you're supposed to navigate, you know, changing times and innovations of technology. And I think that most people will find it really relatable. But basically, you know, I detail about how everything sort of happened, you know, in an entropy way from a universal perspective, but also just, you know, some luck and a lot of hard work that led me to have more and more opportunities. But then also coming to the realization that I want to stick to my original purpose of why I even started working in the first place, which is to tell stories and be a creative. And wherever I feel like current industries or systems that don't allow that to happen, I feel more capable now and have more opportunities to be able to make an attempt at changing that. And then, so that's how I started Shibuya. I think that, you know, content that should be, a lot of content that should be getting made in Hollywood isn't getting made. And so, you know, it's, our content diet is basically curated and funded by a small number of large corporations, studios, right, and distributors right now, which makes it a very monopoly market. And so it makes it impossible for independent filmmakers and creatives to get anything made or off the ground. And that's sort of where Shibuya comes in. And yeah, I mean, you can think of it like if Netflix is changing or it has changed how content is consumed, then the hope is that Shibuya can change the way that content is made.
Right. We're recording this now in the beginning of June 2023. I didn't mean to shorten the time from what you've started to jumping right to Shibuya, but to me, it feels like it was a time lapse in the last few years, right? You've done so much since the beginning of the pandemic till today. It's incredible to see it. Do you think that this would have happened at any other time? I mean, if it was like a normal time and, you know, you didn't go to work for Apple for whatever reason and you were in this crypto bull market would have happened, you know, would this have happened the same way, or would the crypto bull market even have happened during any other time than what we walked about? I'm sure you've had lots of discussions about this.
Yeah, I mean, if I knew the answers to those questions, I think I could either be an oracle or just God, actually. But if you've seen Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is a great movie, I think people can sort of understand the concept of just this sort of multitude of universes with a lot of different things happening. So I feel like everything that you just described there is really sort of unlikely overlap of circumstances that just happened to come together in the symphony of what created, you know, what I'm doing today. And, you know, it was really overwhelming, I think, a little bit over a year ago. But now I'm sort of just learning to surf the wave as it is and really sort of be present in the moment and realize that I have these opportunities, or even as long as people are listening, I will continue to spread messages that are important to me and do what I feel like gives me a creative and also existential purpose.
That's amazing. Amazing. So, okay. So everybody listening, we understand now that Shibuya is the company, but you're creating the first anime from it. It's called White Rabbit. Can you talk a little bit about the inspirations behind this? And, you know, I know it's super in depth and super Web3. So I think we'd like to like hear from you, like where's the inspiration come from and how does Web3 work with this animation series?
Yeah, I think a lot of my work ever since, you know, I started within the crypto industry and stuff, you know, I'm a pretty deep crypto follower, at least since 2017 myself. And so I think I embody a lot of the values of the community and culture. And yeah, everything from the Fortune cover, which I feel so many people even today are still posting about because They feel represented, or it really resonates with the entire culture and community, and also represented a moment, at least telling our story to a more mainstream audience. And so that's really always what my work is about. If you look at the Vogue magazine cover, it's the same thing. And so with White Rabbit, I think it's sort of my way of extending that. So beyond just a still image or a piece of art, I'm now creating something that's longer form, that is metaphorical, but also tells the story of sort of this unique experience that everyone has of going down the crypto rabbit hole and having your entire world and values and paradigm change due to either some kind of revelation. And because it is metaphorical, so it's not on the nose, I think you really have to sort of have experienced it yourself, that when you watch White Rabbit, you would understand. And it's really about this like sort of hero's journey. It's still ongoing. We're 3 chapters in, and we'll release the 4th chapter pretty soon. And, you know, I welcome anybody to go watch it. It's on our website, shibuya.xyz. You can watch it for free for as long as it's being made. And I think that, yeah, it's just a different way for me to just continue to tell this story of what it feels like to have all of these contradicting viewpoints, you know, people telling you that you might be wrong, or, you know, believing in sort of self-sovereignty or what you feel is right to you, despite what institutions or the masses might say. I think that's something, fighting the tide is something that people who have been in crypto, especially for a long time through several bear markets, resonate with very deeply. And really, that's just what White Rabbit is about. And it's just about figuring out your identity through all this and what it really means. Like, what is your version of truth? And what do I feel are my values? And what should I stick to despite what everyone else is saying?
Yeah, that's amazing. But so that is a great idea for the anime. I've seen the anime. It looks beautiful as well. But now the Web3 element comes in, right? So this is very interesting. You are selling White Rabbit producer passes as NFTs. All the holder passes can also start to influence the storyline. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is this like, to people who don't have it, buy NFTs, is this like a Kickstarter? Or how does this producer pass work in funding the project and being part of it?
Yeah, so if I try to explain it to you as if you were 15 years old, then I would say that it's somewhere of a hybrid between Netflix and Kickstarter, where through the purchasing of an NFT, you're essentially financially supporting the creation of a project. But at the same time, this NFT is not useless. You can use the NFT to vote and essentially affect creative decisions that are made within the production of this piece of entertainment. And so White Rabbit has really started as a giant experiment with this. Our opening sort of chapter ends with this background that you see here with our main character, who's right there, and she comes between these two doors, and behind each door there is an alternate ending to this first chapter. And then so with your NFT that you purchased, you can actually vote on which door you would like to see. And, you know, if you have more than one, then you can, and you feel more strongly about one door, you can cast more votes to, you know, one door, et cetera. What started out as an experiment, I think, was a novel idea, but also innovative, and people really caught on and became very curious, you know, not just audiences, but also investors and people of the like, because I think that with Kickstarter, they already really changed the game for people, you know, having access or resources to be able to make something happen. But it is a very passive relationship, just like currently in film and entertainment. Right. The relationship between the creator and the audience is very much a passive one. The experiment was to see how we can change that kind of passive relationship to a more active or collaborative one. And so as opposed to Kickstarter, where you just sort of give somebody money and then you get a water bottle or nothing at all and you wait, you can actually be a part of sort of the creation process and also see every step of the way that this thing is being made. And, you know, if it has a life beyond just the creation of it, that's even better, right? It's like watching a child grow up with you or something.
Yeah, right. So what is your, do you watch like the animation business side of it? Like, will there be White Rabbit action figures and art books? Is this something you're creating like a new IP? Because it seems like you're more from the animation world, bring it to Web3 world. And then I'm, you know, because I'm a, I love the Spider-Verse show movie that just came out, right? So I'm buying the toys and the art books and stuff like that. Is that something that you are planning in the whole phase of this thing? Or is it mostly focusing on the animation side?
Right now, we're definitely just mostly focusing on the animation side, because I think the way that I believe in things is, you know, with obviously there needs to be intention behind creating an IP, but I think that you can't really force an IP to become a thing. So really, I believe in sort of mastering the craft of storytelling in the way that, you know, the animation is beautiful and the story resonates with people, then the IP will essentially create itself, where people will want to buy something associated with this because they love the art so much. And so right. That's the kind of approach. But definitely, you know, when we're designing the characters, like the girl, but more specifically the fox, which you'll see if you watch it, has a very sort of unique and recognizable yeah. design. It is with the intention for it to be a recognizable thing, and not just, you know, some random fox that you see in London. No offense yeah. to random foxes.
I've seen a hashtag on Twitter now, Toon3. So I've seen not only yours, I've seen Stoner Cats, another project out there. I've seen this thing called Crapopolis. It's actually a Fox TV animated series from Dan Harmon, the guy who created, co-created Rick and Morty. They're using it in different ways than you, and then also different ways from each other. But it seems like a lot of people, you know, a lot of companies are looking at Web3 to like build the relationship with the community. Do you think that something like a Star Wars or like a Pixar would start to go into this, you know, this way to kind of communicate with their audience closer? Or do you think that that's like the old school and they're not going to come into this world?
I think there's definitely a balance that needs to be struck between how big your following is versus when you're creating something from the beginning. Because when you think about things that are interesting to me, at least, for example, provenance on chain, or, you know, what does the blockchain really enable? Let's say if we could go back in time before Star Wars was fully created or fleshed out, and you could be part of that process, or you could even just, you know, have some Star Wars related NFTs or tokens to, and that have provenance to prove that you were there from the beginning. I think that's a lot of where the value lies with the blockchain at the very least. So it is a tricky one to navigate. Of course, we always need legacy institutions, or at least, you know, mass adoption to sort of broaden the horizon and the audience, at least that we can reach within Web3. But at the same time, the specific cultures and tones and technology within Web3 are also quite niche, that a lot of larger institutions have a hard time coming in and either understanding it or adopting it in the right ways. And so, yeah, I mean, hopefully we can get to a point where all of this conversation is, you know, not relevant anymore. But certainly right now, it is a constant battle to find, you know, that balance between the two.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you've sold NFTs during the bull run. You made a few millions of dollars selling them, but you recently raised a round of funding from A16Z and Variant, who Lee is also coming to Collision this year, I think. So that's great that you guys are both coming. Why are you raising capital, and what does VC capital add to what you're building?
Yeah, so because White Rabbit started as just a almost experimental project, let's say, we did initially raise capital, you know, from the NFT sales to support the creation of the IP, or, you know, the production of animation. But I think as this sort of novelty of idea caught on, people really became fascinated with Shibuya as a concept, and, you know, not just from the audience side, but also from the creator side. I think artists are also like, oh, well, as an independent creator, how could I use this technology or, you know, a similar framework to elevate my own creations and maybe not have to go through the traditional way of doing things? And so I think once investors started, you know, reaching out with interest and stuff, it made me think, well, you know, if we had capital, and also obviously there being an impending bear market, I felt like really what matters here is actually just that we try to change and attempt to change this sort of really backwards established industry that is Hollywood today. And there's nothing more exciting and also scary to take on than that specific task. And I can't do it alone. And so, you know, with institutional funds, we can hire hopefully the most talented people to help execute this vision. And that's what we're doing. So the institutional money is basically building out Shibuya as a platform. And then the other funds being raised from the NFTs are usually used towards creating the animation itself.
Animation itself, yeah. Great. Okay, that splinters into two great questions I have. So right now, you know, you've experienced the bull market at its full-blown, fierce excitement level. Now you're building this company in the bear market. What challenges do you face now in 2023 while building it? And also, like, you know, are you onboarding animators and, you know, into Web3? And are they, you know, are they excited about this kind of process? But let's talk more about the bear market now. Like, how do you, what are the challenges you face right now that you think that you may have not experienced, like, say, last year?
I think a lot of challenges, mainly just, you know, a lot of doubt from outside people. But it is not my first bear market. So if it's anything like the last, you know, things will go back up, but you need to, you know, see the sort of more for the long term. So, you know, there's a quote that's coming up from the next chapter of White Rabbit that says, fighting the tide is a lonely journey. And I think that's something that a lot of people can resonate with, specifically right. in a bear market, trying to build in this industry. And, you know, anything that comes with innovation and improvement, I think, usually happen in downturns. So it is difficult, but it also is the best time to innovate. Right. And even though there are more people doubting, but you also can take a longer time, because I feel like in a bull market, everything happens so fast that sometimes you can't be true to your values or your art because there's so much pressure from the exterior to deliver, or, you know, I guess greed might take over and things like this. So, you know, it has its ups and downs. And I would say the main challenges is actually just really, it's just believing in, you know, I'm lucky enough to actually still be able to have resources to continue building through a bear market. So, you know, if you're not as lucky as me, then you'll have the problem of running into a way, way less resources. And then at the same time, yeah, it's really hard to persist when everyone else is telling you, see, you were wrong.
Yeah. It's so funny that you say that, because that's the startup plight for forever, right? Since the startup world really started. I also just feel like what you just said can resonate with anybody working in AI over the last 10 years. They were always like, it's coming, it's coming. Or more importantly, the AR thing, right? With Apple releasing their thing. I mean, I went to a conference just before the announcement, and they're talking, you know, Snap is there and everybody's talking about AR, and it seems like they've been talking about it for 10 years and everybody's waiting for Apple to drop this thing where it then kind of, like, you know, makes it real for other people to understand what it is and that there's an actual market, and they can say, see, I told you, I've been working in this market for so long and it is coming, and it's coming now. And so I feel like the same in Web3. I guess the difference with Web3 was that, like, last couple of years, that every media is talking about it like crazy. Everyone's jumping into it, trying to learn what's happening about it. You're on multiple covers talking about it, and all of a sudden, oh, here's the next shiny object. So people have kind of moved to that. Mm-hmm. And then you're kind of like worried about that. How do you hire in a bear market? Like, how do you bring people into the company to help you work? Because, you know, before, I guess it was more like a financial thing. Right now, it's more like, do you believe in the vision kind of thing? But how do you see that in the time right now?
Yeah, I think you really have to sell the vision of your company. So if you're trying to hire just using, you know, sort of trendy terms like, oh, we're an NFT company or we're an AI company, I feel that really only goes so far, especially specifically in bull markets. But within a bear market, you really have to penetrate that and just communicate your vision and why you're here, why you're building what you're building, and really convince the people that what you're building matters. And I feel that, you know, it is easier for me because I do come from that creative background. I lived the whole grungy VFX work or life. And so it's easy for me to convey that. And especially if I'm hiring artists, then I don't even need to explain that. And they've lived through it themselves. So they know and can see immediately why I'm building what I'm building. Yeah. And then when it comes to investors, it's really, again, all about good storytelling. And so if you can convince them that why your vision or where your background and why it took you here matters, then it won't be as hard to hire in a bear market.
Amazing. Amazing. I have millions of more questions for you, Emily. I want to bring the startups on in a minute, but before we get to the startups, you know, if we do any kind of Web3 space and talking about stuff, we got to have some alpha drops. I'm a big fan of Bruce Lee. You worked with the Bruce Lee family to release the House of Lee NFTs. Huge success, easy to get in. What's going on with that project?
So a lot of people have been complaining that we've been a little bit quiet about that project. I can have everyone rest assured that, you know, because I am people pleaser, I will be here to please everyone, and we're not, you know, going anywhere or disappearing into a void. Everything we do is with intention and crafted with care. All I can say right now is that there's probably something of like an animation project in the works. We actually have built and put out sort of in silent right now, also an AI Bruce Lee bot that you can sort of interact with in the meantime. It's on our website as well. If you go to shows, House of Lee, you can find the bot there and, you know, just sort of chat with a virtual Bruce. Really, it's about spreading his philosophy to a younger generation and at the same time retaining this kind of anime style that everyone loves from the 80s and 90s era. And also, once we have more to officially announce, we can talk about this, but it really goes back to the story of Shibuya and why we're here. But I think Shannon Lee, who is Bruce Lee's daughter, has also had her own experiences with traditional Hollywood and why, she would rather do something more experimental with Shibuya. So there's a lot of exciting stuff.
Awesome. So exciting. Yeah. And that's just the next question there, like working with Shannon and the family, like how do you explain what this is all about, right? I'm sure they're looking for opportunities to, you know, push out her father's messages, and Web3 sounds a great idea, but you know, what may be some of the questions that she might have had working with a Web3 project like this? Like what, because I always get this question from people who are not into it, and how do I get involved? What's the problems? How's it going to benefit me? Things like that. But what was the mission that you think that got her on board to be part of this?
I think it really was the core mission of Shibuya, which is that we want to help people tell the stories that we believe should be told, and that our viewers can come to Shibuya to not only find, but also fund, watch, and participate in up and coming indie content. And, just really get things off the ground. And so that off the bat, not only do you have, you know, a faster and more creative way to get funding for a project, but also that you'll have a bootstrapped community of super fans almost from the inception of the project, which I feel like never happens in traditional Hollywood, right? You know, sort of a movie gets, you know, it's sort of made within like a black box with all these like producers or whatever behind the curtain making these decisions. And then finally, after years, they bring it out to the audience, and then the audience say if they like it or not. It is a completely new way of doing things. And I think Shannon was just very curious to see what would happen. I think she's a very open-minded person. And so she's just down to experiment with us. And we're so grateful for that.
That's amazing. Oh, and then one final question I always like to ask. So you're so busy with so many projects, right? You've got the Shibuya, White Rabbit, House of Lee. You're directing music videos for Linkin Park. You've got Please Your Dao. What does Emily do get away from it? Like kind of, what do you do to relax or get away from it? Or do you, is it just so in a wave? Cause I know you're into animation, so I can't ask you, you probably watch animation, but it's still kind of work, right? Do you play video games to relax? That's kind of work still. Like, what do you do to kind of like relax from your day?
I play video games. Recently, I play Overcooked to sort of de-stress. That sounds weird, but I do. I also am huge fan of panoramic vision nowadays. So I just honestly, what that means is just going outside, not being obstructed by a screen or and bike riding. I think I've discovered e-bikes recently, which is honestly a life hack. I feel like they should be illegal. You shouldn't just go up a hill without exerting much effort at all, but it's great. I think I like boxing too. Those are probably like the types of things, you know, beyond like traveling and also spending time with my family, that kind of stuff.
Nice. Awesome. Awesome. Okay, great. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. I have more questions. Hopefully I can get to them when you come to Collision. But let's bring on some of our startups. These three startups are exhibiting at Collision this year. All of them are in the Web3 space, and they have some great questions they'd like to ask you. So let's bring them on to the screen. And like magic, there they are. Okay, say hello to Austin from Galactic Gaylords. He's going to be exhibiting in the Alpha program. David from Cash Labs is in the Beta program. And Archie is Adam Knight Labs and in the Alpha program. How are you guys doing? Wave to Emily.
Hey, how's it going?
Nice, nice, nice. Okay, why don't we start with Austin. Austin, what is your question for Emily?
Sure. Let me catch my breath here. Such a fanboy. So pleased to have you here, Emily. You know what, Casey, you did such a good job of asking questions. I'm actually going to pivot and dig into one a little deeper. We talked about the power of storytelling and making your stories more interactive for your audience. And you had the producer passes, which was a novel idea. So I'm wondering how you got to that idea and how you kept people engaged throughout the process without them dropping off.
Yeah, I think people dropping off is normal, and the more people get to used to that kind of idea, the better that you can acclimate to building something. But moving past that, although the original idea actually came from watching Bandersnatch, which is this one-off episode of Black Mirror that's interactive. It came out in 2019, and when Netflix made it, actually, they really created an entire separate tech arm just to make it happen. And when I watched it, it was super mind-blowing in the way that it changed storytelling, I think, for a passive audience, right? And then so as I was thinking about this, I was like, okay, how do I combine all of these problems that I had in my head about that I'm trying to solve, like, you know, the Kickstarter problem and also traditional Hollywood and, you know, passive viewership, things like that. And I think taking Bandersnatch and then combining it with Web3 was how the idea of producer passes were born, because, you know, so many people talk about utility, or I guess staking was a cool concept in just the Web3 space, but what do you what do you use it for beyond, you know, doing things in DeFi and things like that, right? So yeah, I think that's sort of how that all came together. And, you know, it's by no means a fully fleshed out perfect idea. It's, you know, ever growing, ever changing, and we're always open to, you know, new constructive feedback and also other people to help add to this kind of dynamic or idea and innovation to create a better product that will just improve everyone's lives and just make it better for storytelling.
Yeah, that's awesome. And if you could go back to square one of launching this producer pass and this idea generation, is there one thing you would change that's maybe given you some difficulties?
Mm. Yes. I think the first thing I would change is I would have swapped over to probably gasless staking. I know in the beginning, I mean, we did do it during a bull market, so everyone was rich and it was all fun and games and, you know, paying $50 in gas, haha, whatever. But now in a bear market, you're like, oh, that sounds terrible. I wouldn't even pay $50 for a producer pass, right? Wow. So yeah, but that's always been the concept from the beginning, is that we would always work towards getting this as being as affordable as possible. And so yeah, I would start with gasless staking. I would also do probably make them ERC-721s as opposed to 1155s. Why this matters is because the whole concept of ERC-721s is that each of them is unique. So each token itself can actually have its own provenance of voting and, you know, where it's been, you know, what decisions have been made on it, and amongst a million other things that can be attached to that specific token that you just don't have with 1155s. And I think, yeah, those are like the main ones, really. There's probably a bunch more that I'm missing right now, but I'm going to have to go read my white paper and get back to you.
No, that's super helpful. Thank you.
All right, David, do you have a question for Emily?
Yes, I got a couple. First of all, thank you so much, Emily, for taking this time out of your busy schedule to join us. This talk was actually really incredible, and I got a lot of great insights from how you bring, like, trad film and animation industry insights into Web3 and vice versa, and just really, really fabulous insights. So thank you, first of all. I have two questions. One of them is a little bit about how you structure all of this, amazing work that you do. So, I'm always very inspired by, like the Andy Warhol concept of, business is the finest form of art, and, the business can be art. And you've gone between all sorts of mediums, animation, you've done print media, you've done, obviously still digitals, motion digitals, beyond, you've created PleaserDAO, you've worked with so many different companies at this point. What is your advice from somebody who wants to go from artist or creative to founder like you have?
Yeah, I think there's a fine line. First, don't be a people pleaser. That's probably not going to help you by any means. And I think it's really just, amongst all the noise or everything chaotic that could be happening, just really having a clear sort of vision or at least values that you hold close to, what you care about. I think for me, it took some time to get here, but I ultimately realized that it is good storytelling and just sort of making people feel things is my value, or that's my sort of North Star. And it kind of guides me through everything that I do. So I think finding that for you is really important. And then the rest is just, whatever opportunities come, it's like spaghetti, you just throw it on the wall and see what sticks.
100%. And you do such a great job of working with that like experimental model, but still with so many big businesses and so many things simultaneously. It's very impressive. My other question is actually kind of around this. It's in terms of working with all these different partners. You use the term idea sex to, talk about how you work with so many different collaborators. And, I do believe from my perspective, working with Web3 now for a few years, there is so much superfluous nature, one thing leads to another. There is very much a lot of synergy, synchronicity, all these things. So what, from your perspective, I guess maybe just if you could expand on that idea for the people listening and for us, on this idea of idea sex and how important collaboration has been to your work and continues to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably more relevant than ever to talk about this now that AI is a thing. With all the backlash that's happening with AI, I think that really what AI is doing is just what humans have been doing for thousands of years, which is just feeding off of each other and then birthing new ideas from each other. But really, they're not completely new ideas, right? They're all just sort of like a remix of what's been done before. You can think of that with traditional art, or you can think of that with, design. You can think of that with music. Music is all, there's only 12 notes, right? And then, what everybody is doing is just remixing those 12 notes over and over again. And I think that's the same thing with, ideas, is that when you meet somebody, you have one idea, they have a different idea. You can compound your ideas and then come, maybe three more ideas that are somewhat tangentially related, but also a little bit different. I think that's sort of the idea of idea sex. I'm gonna stop using the word idea. So yeah, I think that is kind of, and I feel like it's a lot easier to do that, when you're having a lot of conversation with people, whether in person or online.
Fabulous. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Japan just recently set a precedent for AI art, right? AI generative models, right? They're not going to use it. It's not going to be protected by the law. And I thought that Japan was one of the first ones that are going to protect all their stuff, because they don't like manga being translated into English, and they try to sue every website in the States, right, that's doing that. I'd like, you just mentioned it, so I'd like to dive a little bit deeper on that from a creative standpoint. I guess we're going to talk more about Midjourney than we are to ChatGPT. But, how do you feel about all that? Or how does your community feel about, all the art being kind of pulled into this data set and not being, properly monetized by the original artists and things like that? I love ArtStation. I love looking at all that stuff there, but I can see all the pieces being pulled out of that into when I type into Midjourney.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is definitely a very contentious topic. And I do want to be careful with how I say this. I'm by no means not supporting artists. I am an artist myself too. But, I think I always think about the old man yells at cloud meme, where, if you're sort of getting mad at AI, it really is, you really need to familiarize yourself with the technology and use it in a way that's right, obviously. But it's the same thing as saying, okay, the same way we're creating art now is I'm looking at other people's art and then I'm getting inspired from that. And I feel like it's all about how you sort of repurpose it, package it, and market it that in a way that isn't just a straight copy, but that it has its own, you know, your own touch to it, a different style to it, or whatever it is. You know, what separates something from, let's say, when you're making a movie and you're, you know, making an homage to an older film where it's, you're right, pretty much almost copying it shot for shot, then why is that not, you know, plagiarism? And then AI art is, I feel like a lot of these lines are really fuzzy, and it really depends on, you know, sort of your level of clout or how you market it and how you repurpose it and how you communicate it to other people. And there's a lot of biases there. So, you know, it's not a black and white issue, but, you know, as an artist, to protect yourself, I think it's just important to stay on top of everything that's happening and, you know, don't fall behind, right? If AI is merely just a tool, learn how you can use it to make yourself more efficient, so that all it really is having idea or, you know, sort of feeling inside, and then translating that to something tangible or, you know, visible on the exterior, and, you know, the transfer of that energy and information. AI could be here to help with that.
Okay. Great. That reminds me of a great YouTube documentary I saw called Everything is a Remix. And they really basically looked at Quentin Tarantino's films, and you can see his, he basically grabs inspiration, I guess, from all these other movies from like Hong Kong and around the world. So it is, that's a good point. I like that. Okay. Let's go to Archie. Archie's not in another dimension. He just has maybe a little bit of a lag on his thing, but Archie, what's your question for Emily?
Yeah. Emily, thank you so much for taking the time. One of my questions was, you know, then this is something that's been repeated in the space, but a lot of even technologists and people who are part of like the cyberpunk movement, you know, that sort of fostered the birth of crypto and Web3, have said this technology is too difficult to grasp for the average individual, right? Like talking about NFTs, decentralized governance, DAOs, right? Like, how do you think, you know, as we move forward as an industry, how can we sort of bridge that gap to where the average consumer of a comic book is able to understand this technology and interact with it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel, you know, everyone has a different way or medium to do this. My medium right now is storytelling, or at least with animation, I hope to do something like that, and that's similar to what I was doing in early DeFi days too, where I was reading a white paper of something that seems really complicated and even I don't understand sometimes. And then I think it's always about coming up with analogies. And I feel like analogies are a really good way for people to understand something. And so, you know, back in the day when it was like swapping tokens or whatever, I remember creating a video for Pickle where I turn it into a vending machine. And so it's like you put in one token and you get something, and then you swap the token and you get something else comes out. Coming up with these kind of analogies really helps. You know, when we talk about like the open edition craze with Manifold, you know, I was talking about them as online pop-up shops where, you know, everybody can just open a shop and for a certain period of time you're selling these goods. And then, you know, when the open edition ends and you close the shop. And so when you, if you're trying to explain it in pure technical terms, you're going to lose your audience. They're not even going to understand you. But when you turn it into something that, you know, is a more sort of practical real life analogy or situation that they understand, I think that's a lot easier. And then whether you're doing that through verbal communication or visual, you know, animation, that's completely up to you.
Yeah. And I guess sort of, you know, leading into that, my second question is, you know, sort of hit that one Casey was asking you, but, you know, what's sort of the next step for Shibuya? Like how, you know, what's the sort of the next step to making, you know, reducing that gap where the average person who's maybe not a experienced artist or a experienced creator can hop in and create their own intellectual property or create their own piece of artwork, whether that's, you know, an animation, you know, video, whatever. What's sort of the net vision there?
Well, I think there's several different layers and elements to this. The first one being definitely crowdfunding via NFTs or the blockchain is, you know, helping with the financing aspect of it. And then the other parts, for example, I think with the rise of AI, it is lowering the barrier to entry for people to, you know, acquire the skills necessary to make what they want to make. And so it's all about just developing all of these things in tandem. At least that's my dream, so that we can get to a place where everybody which I truly believe every human on this planet is a creative, whether you're, you know, a lawyer or, you know, something that you consider not creative, everyone is creative. And so that these tools are really just to help shorten the time from like brain to paper, essentially.
Yeah. I just want to make sure everybody knows that Shibuya is not a production company, right? It's a platform. And you've also included shows from Steve Aoki and Seth Green. Seth Green, who was one of the co-creators of the Robot Chicken show, that stop motion and action figure show. How do you onboard those guys? Do they come to you, or do you reach out to them? And who else are you looking to bring on to create some animation?
Yeah, they came to me, actually. You know, Steve and I are good friends from working before, and we have the same manager. So it was sort of natural that they already had this idea for this film that they were creating, and then they actually just needed a platform to distribute, or, you know, to create that interactive component to it. So it was sort of a match made in heaven, and I'm so glad that we did that. It's a really cute animation. You can also watch it on our site. Hopefully, you know, in the future, we'll be able to have enough resources to open up to more creators to be able to use Shibuya as a platform. Right now, obviously, we're still in the scaling stage, so we're being a little bit more intentional with the curation on our site. And so really, we're looking for people who have, you know, a certain level of quality of the work that they produce. And also, this is, you know, we're looking for indie IPs that have high potential, basically. Yeah.
Cool. That's another thing I've noticed as well. There's a lot of these Web3 creative companies coming out of Los Angeles, right? As opposed to maybe San Francisco or New York. I feel like the Hollywood creators seem to understand this idea a bit more. I see a lot of DAOs being formed. A lot of celebrities are getting involved, opening writers' rooms and things like that. Do you think that's because LA is more used to creating this kind of experiential creative IP than maybe, obviously, San Francisco is much more... that's very nerdy, right? So AI here is like super like normal here, right? I don't think it's so easy to get in any other city, but in LA, definitely the animation, special effects, you know, Hollywood style, it seems to be bigger. Do you see, but then at the same time, you know, I'm based out of Hong Kong, and I got to say, Asia doesn't know what's happening in North America. Like Web3 is massive over there. There are ads for all kinds of stuff, NFT, there's magazines in the newsstand. It's like still it's 2021 over there. And so I was wondering, like, what do you see in the markets? You know, you're North America primarily, but you travel to Asia as well. You know, what do you see in terms of like where the hotspots might be popping in the next, say, you know, for the rest of this year?
It's really hard to say. I mean, I went to Seoul this year, and I noticed that there's definitely a huge interest in Web3 in Seoul, and the sentiment there is pretty positive. And so, yeah, I don't know if it's like they have a lag behind, because I feel like in North America right now, it's all doom and gloom. I mean, you know, right. SEC and Binance drama lately isn't helping. But, you know, hopefully this is all flash in the pan, you know, when you zoom out enough. And so, it just is interesting. You know, I would hope that in the spirit of something like a Pangea, you know, we're not separating continents anymore. And it's really just about drawing what each culture or land can bring. So, you know, with Japan, I think there's such a rich culture of just IPs in general. You know, they're literally sitting on a gold mine of, you know, things that can be valuable and brought forth to this industry. And then with the innovations, let's say, that are happening in North America, with, I think, you know, just the power of communities coming from places like, you know, China or other parts of Asia, I think could all just sort of help shape this borderless industry that we're essentially all building together.
Great. We're coming up to the end of the show. Guys, do you have any more questions? Please just go for it.
Yeah, I was thinking, I actually wanted to ask you this based off the fact that you were sort of talking about, you know, I guess borderless and you know, sort of cross-cultural sort of ecosystem. What do you think about sort of creatives and anonymous creatives sort of coming in this space, right? So like, you know, maybe someone who doesn't have a face or a persona, doesn't really embody a culture, coming in and being an active creator. We've had several sort of projects being started by anonymous creators. Like, what are your thoughts on that? There's obviously like that debate between trust. You know, you can't really trust someone who's anonymous, especially behind an NFT project.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can call me you know, naive optimist, but I obviously always come from the concept of trusting people first and giving them the doubt. And so at least in my experience too, most of the anonymous people, you know, within the industry don't come with bad intentions. I think that it's just because we can now, especially with crypto, as well as, you know, everything moving towards a more digitally native future. It's just never been possible before to do things anonymously in the same way that it is now. So why wouldn't you take advantage of that? And I also think that it's fun. And people are obviously not new to this concept of living a double life. I think everyone has their own fantasy of it. That, you know, I was actually thinking the other day that the whole concept of the Miley Cyrus show, I honestly don't remember what it's called, but you know, the show that she's like famous for, where she grows up
Hannah Montana.
She's like a normal high school kid, and then she has this alter ego as a pop star. You know, obviously this is far drawn, but it really is sort of around that same concept of people thinking that they can have multiple identities now, with people and things being anonymous. And so there's definitely a lot of ways that we can take advantage of that, but also, you know to not abuse it. But you know, I don't know. It's hard to say. There's like, you cannot be anonymous, cough, FTX, and still be a bad actor in the space anyway. So, right. Yeah.
I think that the anonymity gets a bad rap too. There are people, I'm going to speak for my community, in the queer community, that live in places where it's illegal to be gay, illegal to come out. So this really gives them that opportunity to be their authentic selves online when they're not allowed to be their true selves in the real world.
Yeah. And even, you know, just as something like being a girl, especially in the film industry, for whatever reason, your voice, at least for the past, you know, however many decades, just carries significantly less weight than that of a male perspective. Obviously, I hope that changes. So, you know, I can totally see why. You know, it's just kind of like, what was that other movie where Amanda Bynes was playing, you know, disguising as a male soccer player when she's actually really good at soccer?
One of the boys or something. I know what you're talking about. She's the man.
Yeah. It's the same thing, right? Like, that's the same as anonymity. It's just, if you think you can do something as good as somebody else, but not be able to, you know, be judged for, you know, where you come from. Actually, sorry, I'm going on a tangent here, but I literally was reading Shannon Lee's book recently, and then she talked about how growing up, her mom would tell her, oh, don't talk about the fact that Bruce Lee is your dad. I want people to get to know you for who you are. I think that's, you know, always, you know, it's not always positive or negative, but just always around the same philosophy. And I think that anonymity could be a great thing.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
I have one last question, since we have a second more. I always love to ask project founders this, because I think you're actually like a really great example. So, like, I've had a couple conversations with people in the space who recently we critique a lot of projects by saying that the only utility that they provide is the ability to spend more money as, like, you know, a project's utility. And, you know, a lot of people are being critiqued in the space for, you know, promising something and then not being able to fill. You know, we're going to have a AAA game that we're going to roll out in 6 months. Never happens. But I think you've done a great job of, you know, promising things and then fulfilling them and then continuing to roll out, you know, test little features and, you know, make really big splashes by doing so. And you know, I remember your you know, SHIB thing in Decentraland, and like, there's so many like little moments that were so much fun. So I'm curious, from your perspective, what's your message to project founders or people in the Web3 space who might be over-promising and under-delivering?
Yeah, well, first, stop doing that. You're just creating a endless life of stress for yourself. Right. That's entirely unnecessary. I always, even to my own team and our team meetings, say that we should never overpromise on anything, and don't lose sight of what we're really building here. You know, I think it might take time and it might suck, you know, during the process, especially when people start doubting, whatever. But, you know, by the time that it does deliver, your work will speak for itself. And so just don't lose sight of that.
Love that.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and since we're sort of coming up on time, did anyone else have a question? Or
go for it, Archie.
Yeah. Since we're sort of coming up on the end of time, you know, one of the last questions I wanted to ask was, as a founder who sort of started, you know, with went through a difficult time with, you know, with the whole Apple, as Casey has mentioned, with the whole Apple, you know, not being able to figure during the pandemic, and then sort of scaling that and pushing towards actually launching, you know, Pleaser DAO. And then later should be, what's your message to sort of other founders or maybe, you know, building in the bear market? And, you know, I mean, we're part of this, but I'm sure other founders are as well. You know, maybe unable to go through a fundraising round or unable to get the user traction. Like, what's the sort of ending message to say, like, push through it and get to where you want to be?
Yeah, well, I think persistence and patience is key. Definitely don't do it, you know, naively. So, you know, if you're thinking something repeatedly is not working, obviously take the time to sit down and think about why it's not working and see what you can do to improve on that. But as a general whole, if you really believe in what you're building, then just stick to it as truly and authentically yourself as possible. And then, you know, I probably say this a lot better in my A16Z talk, which you guys should go watch. That would actually be my ultimate alpha, or, you know, to get inspired at the very least, because it was specifically targeted towards founders. But yeah, I think in the same line of what Steve Jobs was saying, which is trusting the process, and that, you know, one day you're going to look back and connect the dots backwards and just know that, you know, what you were building all this time was true to you, and that that's all that matters to you, and really just sticking to it. And believing in yourself.
Yeah, I love that. I love that quote from Steve. It's great. Okay, that's the time we have, but I really want to ask one last question. What are you watching right now? What are you recommending? I just saw Across the Spider-Verse. It was amazing. I couldn't believe that American animation can be that incredible. But are you watching any anime? Are you playing any games that you want to share with us?
Yeah, I'm actually going to watch Across the Spider-Verse tonight. So I'm super duper excited about that. Beyond that, I'm thinking about starting Succession, the TV show. I'm probably late to the game. I just finished Beef. It's amazing. Those are the things I'm watching.
Okay, great, great. Excellent. Okay. Thanks, everyone. That's going to end the live stream now. See you all, Collision. Toronto is a lot of fun this month. It is the Pride Parade will be on the 25th, the Sunday before Collision begins as well. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Emily. You can see more of her work at shibuya.xyz. I'll also link a lot of the stuff we spoke about today in the links on all the social media you're watching this on. And also thanks to our startups who you will meet in person at Collision, and to my Web Summit production team helping me put all this together. For any more information about Collision, just head over to collisionconf.com, and we'll see you all in Toronto. Thank you, everyone. See you soon in real life.
Thank you.